Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C. This is Agriculture Today.
So, net-net, that was a surprise.
Talking cattle on feed, Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading Chicago.
No doubt about it. That number came up pretty high in terms of the placements, and that was a shocker to the market. And the market did a really quick job of discounting that information and repricing to the downside. So we saw those big moves to the downside, the gaps lower on the chart in the live cattle futures, and the continuation lower for the feeder cattle futures to the downside. But to your point, okay, so that's in the market, and yet we were able to move a little bit lower in feeder cattle after the report, but nonetheless more sideways than not. So it kind of feels like it instantly repriced down to what seems like a base of a value area, shall we say. And then for the fat cattle, if you're looking at the December, it pretty much shrugged off that weakness.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
For the most part, the market does a pretty good job of giving us an opinion as to whether or not there's ample supply or not enough supply, and that all just kind of shows up in the price.
Bob Maurer's with Manduca Trading in Chicago.
And when you look at what's happened with corn lately, we're pretty much sitting near about the pricing lows, right? Sitting about 480s. The highs recently in this longer term range that we've been have been about in the 520s, you know, maybe like the 510, something like that. So we're basically in about a 40 or 50 cent range, and the market hasn't found a new catalyst to neither break down nor rally. So I think it's just a matter of keeping an eye on, like I just said, with what's going on here in the United States and, you know, potentially any surprise that might come out in terms of yield, although I don't think there will be. I think we're pretty much in a good range bound situation in terms of expectations for yield right now. But in terms of looking elsewhere, and especially down in South America, we'll see how things continue to evolve down there in terms of the crop getting in the ground and then any weather events that'll start happening in terms of maybe affecting, you know, the ultimate yield and what kind of crop they have down there. So that's key. And then in terms of wheat, again, more of a sideways thing. It's kind of interesting that we're sitting here down towards lows in the hard red winter wheat. And we're also sitting here down towards lows in the hard red spring. And then even the soft red winter, the Chicago variety, you know, also sitting down towards its lows. And then we've got all these geopolitical risks that we, you know, basically are hearing on a week in and week out basis. And you would have thought at this point that it'd be some kind of significant rally, because I think one major theme that a lot of traders of wheat, you know, beyond just the supply and demand numbers that we try to come up with, the major theme is food security. So all this potential leakage of unrest, shall we say, in the Middle East, and how that might impact those who are in that neck of the woods thinking about procuring as much inventory as they possibly can to garner enough food security for the population. You would have thought that that would have driven the prices higher. And yet we're just kind of drifting here towards the low. So when a market has potential bullish news, but doesn't act so, it certainly is something that not just in the ag markets that we talk about week on week, but also in the metals, the energies and such, when you get a catalyst that should be driving the market, at least, you know, when I say the word should, it's always, you know, something you kind of got to, you know, be careful with using, but would normally probably at least prompt some kind of pretty decent rally in the market. It just isn't doing it. That's kind of a bearish sign. So it'll be interesting to see how this thing trades over the next couple few weeks in terms of the wheat markets. And you know, as for corn, similar story. You would have thought at this point with the pretty good rally that we had seen in energy markets, not today they're off. I mean, the energy markets were down, and I'm talking about crude and heating oil and RBOB and the natty gas markets. Crude was down almost $3 a barrel, heating oil down about 7.5 cents, and RBOB unleaded gas down about 700 points or so, which is 7 cents. The reason I bring those up is, you know, there's a strong energy component to corn. And the market had been higher, and yet we hadn't seen any huge rate, you know, rally out of these recent low prices for corn beyond the range that I mentioned at the onset here. So again, it's kind of the market was given some kind of bullish signals on some of the inputs that drive prices for our ag markets, and yet they haven't really reacted to the upside yet. So maybe we need to get farther through harvest down here. Maybe we need to see whether or not they're able to get the crop in the ground down in South America and what kind of weather they're getting at the onset there to have a better feel as to whether or not, you know, these markets can actually rotate around and hold on to some kind of gain. But the fact that we're getting some bullish news and the market's not acting that way, to my point, I think that ought to have some concern for those who are looking to get bullish or, you know, need the market to move higher to maybe price out some of their hedging that they need to do. So it'll be interesting to see what happens over the next couple few weeks.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We like to sell to all people.
Kurt Blades is with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers.
So I mean, I guess just the reality is that, you know, as you mentioned during the pandemic, some of these large horsepower tractors were not moving particularly quick. Those dealers still have to pay the light bills. And so, you know, the volume of those small tractors really allows for those companies to remain efficient and keep the prices at a manageable place for the large equipment. So again, that diversity of product line absolutely matters. And wanting to be able to satisfy, you know, sort of all markets and all customer types. The other thing we have to take a look at is that equipment is aspirational sometimes. And the latest and greatest technologies available on the high-end luxury vehicles, luxury cars. And because that's where you kind of the proving ground to do things like, you know, cars that drive themselves and stuff like that. Well, the same thing happens in the equipment market, where the latest and greatest technology oftentimes is put into those higher end or top of the line markets. And it's sort of fun to see that technology trickle its way down as efficiencies come into play there. And so I think that's where it's fun to talk about those entire markets, like every farmer, depending on what you're producing, you know, can be satisfied by a different class of equipment. That's sort of fun about talking about all the classes that we break out. We talk about under 40 horsepower or over 100 horsepower. And up to, you know, 500 and 600 horsepower, there's a market for every single one of those pieces of equipment, and it's very different on what they're trying to produce.
Now, AEM is a member of Commodity Classic.
The dates have been set for Commodity Classic, which will occur in Houston this year, late February, early March. And now's the time for your listeners to begin thinking about putting their plans together and attending Commodity Classic, where they can see that latest greatest equipment on display. I think we're going to see some new debuts that will happen either that week or slightly maybe a day or two right before Commodity Classic. So it'll be first on display. Really good chance for your listeners to see some of that precision agriculture equipment and really learn about it while speaking to the folks that actually are designing it or the folks that are the project managers of that equipment to see how that can make a difference in their individual farming operation.
AEM also recognized for putting farm equipment on the National Mall.
Whenever you can show someone that hasn't seen a tractor up close or hasn't seen a new tractor up close maybe the last 20 to 30 years, and you can let them see what that technology is, we're talking about in Washington, D.C. on the National Mall, it makes a big difference, especially when those people are regulators and lawmakers that are, you know, crafting policy like Farm Bill policy or crafting regulatory work that is dealing with the safe operation that maybe have never seen this type of equipment. So you're giving these folks a chance to crawl all over the equipment and answer their questions is a tremendous opportunity for the entire agriculture industry. And I would truly believe is making a difference when we get through some of the, you know, challenges that we're dealing with on the federal level right now politically, we start talking about a Farm Bill. Guarantee that those discussions that are happening about the Farm Bill will be largely informed by the celebration of Ag on the Mall that we had a couple of years ago. And they may still be, if we're still debating when we have celebration of Ag on the Mall in May of 2024, heck, we may be still talking about it at that time as well. I guarantee that those lawmakers make better decisions when they know what that equipment looks like and they have those conversations about what that equipment can do for the good of farmers and for the good of society in general.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We represent the full supply chain, and we represent the world. And the people that are out picking in this heat that we're talking about right now are the people that we're actually fighting for.
Kathy Burns is the CEO of the International Fresh Produce Association.
We have a labor crisis, we have a nutrition crisis, we have an economic crisis. And if I think about what this reform can do to help all three of those, we are living in a country right now that if we don't change the trajectory of the eating habits of the next generation, this will be the first generation that do not live as long as their parents. And that is unacceptable. How? We need to be able to provide nutritious, safe, consistent supply of fresh fruits and vegetables every day. We're a $76 billion industry that needs stability. And how we're going to get Stability is affordable products. And the way we're going to get affordable products is access to labor. So you heard it, the details in black and white from the report that the professor from Texas A&M shared. It's in black and white. People, we are not eliminating American jobs. We are actually increasing wages for the workforce. That's a huge opportunity for our industry. It's required to ensure that we keep consumer prices down. We're at record high inflation numbers. We need the labor in order to support the picking, the planting, the production, the shipping into the grocery stores and the restaurants that we serve. So if we want to fix inflation, if we want to have a healthier nation and healthier Americans, and we want to do it consistently, let's act now.
David Fisher is president of the New York Farm Bureau.
Encourage the U.S. Senate to provide the needed stability that farmers like myself and our valued employees need to do the important work that we do. My family and I own a dairy farm in northern New York. Ag labor reform is a priority for myself, our New York Farm Bureau members across the state and across the country. We're very proud of the production and diverse production we have. Dairy, apples, cabbage, all of which are very labor-intensive, different needs. It's paramount we have a system that addresses both long and short-term labor needs in this country, and it should modernize the H-2A guest worker program, which I can personally tell you is very cumbersome to use, as we use it on our crop side. It includes opening the system to year-round employees that are needed on dairy farms like mine to milk cows 12 months of the year. We also need to have a system that addresses the hardworking men and women who are already here in this country, producing and caring for livestock and crops. Labor shortages not only limit growth on our farms, they hold back food production and make it difficult to do the work that all of us depend on. I thank everyone here for moving the process forward and hope we'll soon have a bill in the Senate that addresses the needs. It's decades overdue, as has been said. If it's not dealt with, it's rapidly going to move from a food insecurity and food cost program problem to one that's been said is a national priority, national security issue. If we can't take care of our farmers and feed our people, where are we? As many have said, a hungry person, we have lots of problems in this country and lots of things we're working on, but what is more important to anyone who has food insecurity? They only have one problem. It's getting enough calories. And I think we need to address this and help solve that problem and many others in the country.
It's Agriculture Today.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
I think we've actually stabilized a little bit now that we've got the new speaker in place. The hope is that we can go forward and really start working on some of the problems that you described.
Ranking member of the Senate Ag Committee, Dr. John Bozeman from Arkansas, but does Congress really have the appetite to fix the problem?
I think necessity is the mother of invention. And so we've been talking about this for a long time, but now, because of these high interest rates that are really hurting individuals so much, that have come about suddenly, the same thing is happening to the government. So, yeah, I think there will be an appetite, and we're going to have to explain to the public why we need to do these things. Although they're pretty wise, they will understand. And I think ultimately, and we're a ways off from this, but ultimately the way that you solve this problem is to go to the same method that our states have. Almost every state in the union has a balanced budget amendment. We don't need to necessarily balance our budget, but we need a spending amendment in place that makes it such that we can't borrow over what's deemed a healthy amount. You know, we all borrow money to make money and things. That's okay. We borrow money sometimes for things that we need, but you have to have the ability to pay that back. And so ultimately, I think that's the fix. Until then, we need to work together to do our very best and just simply do the job of cutting back on spending. We've got all kinds of things going on in the world, though, that make that difficult. We could talk about Israel. We could talk about Ukraine. We could talk about the fact that, we're running out of munitions. The whole world is. The number one thing that we should be spending on should be defense. because of the dangerous situation we have in the world, defense is going to cost more money.
But the 2018 Farm Bill has expired, and it won't be long before producers are talking with lenders looking at the 24 crop.
Well, because of, you know, being late in the appropriations process, the, you know, the things that have gone on in the House, trying to get, you know, some stability there. And then making sure, you know, that we have plenty of farm in the Farm Bill, it's taking us a while. So myself and Senator Stabenow have been working together to, make sure that, as you said, that the farmers have the ability to know that a farm bill is in place for the next year. They need that, but they, for themselves, but they also need it, as you pointed out, when they go down and talk to their banker. The banker needs to know that, that there is a way based on crop insurance, ARC, PLC, all of the risk management tools, that they have the ability to pay that loan back. So we're visiting with leadership now, talking about an extension for a year to hook this on to the continuing resolution that will happen around the week before Thanksgiving. And just making sure that, that this is in place. It doesn't mean it's going to take us a year to get a farm bill done. Hopefully we'll get it done shortly after the first of the year. It might be longer. But it's just something that we can put in our back pocket and take some of the pressure off of us. But more importantly, take the pressure off the farm community, knowing that, you know, that we've worked hard to make sure that the current programs go on.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Agriculture Today.
We have a piece of legislation to actually fix what they call the 1099. Probably something you never thought about.
Arizona Representative David Schweikert.
But if you're a small business, are you even with your family? Spend more than $600 on lawn service or some particular contract. You know you're supposed to file with the IRS, meaning millions and millions and millions of Americans and small businesses are actually in violation of the law today. Well, we're going to fix that. We have a piece of legislation to raise that number, not from $600 all the way up to $5,000. We're trying to inflation adjust it to make it just fairer and less burdensome on small businesses and Americans.
Talks about the delusion of debt.
All discretionary is pretty much borrowed this year. Think about that. So if you're part of the brain trust that walks in, this is me beating up on myself and some of my friends. You walk in and say, we can balance the budget by getting rid of foreign aid. A couple weeks ago, I showed the chart. That's like 12 days of borrowing. The last 12 months. Anyone want to guess? Let's play a game. In your head right now, last 12 months, how much have we been borrowing per second? What's the burn rate? What's the borrowing rate last 12 months? Not the fiscal year, the last running calendar 12 months. What have we been borrowing per second? If you said $63,000 a second in your head, you're really good at math. Because in the last 12 months, we borrowed $2 trillion. It's over $63,000 every second. The delusion that debt doesn't matter. Maybe it doesn't matter until it does. And when it does, it's the poor. It's the working middle class that are going to get their heads kicked in. It is immoral what's going on here.
And the interest on today's debt will sink the ship.
Interest spending is now a key thing in driving parts of the debt. I'm going to show a couple boards here showing it's spending and interest. And when we say spending, let's be honest, it's mostly healthcare. One of the things we're not supposed to say out loud, but it is. When you actually, and this is a complex board, we should actually put it up. But here's where we are. And actually, one of the things that's fascinating with this is you're about to see interest in just a couple of years exceed defense. So the interest payment next year is $750 billion. A couple of years after that, the interest expenditure for this government will be more than defense. Then you keep looking. A couple of years after that exceeds non-defense discretionary. It'll be more money than that in a couple more years after that. And you start to get into 20 years from now, interest is more than Medicare, and yet Medicare is the primary driver of U.S. debt. And then at a certain point, it starts to exceed 6.7% of the entire economy. The entire economy is just the debt payment of the United States. And this isn't conjecture. This is functionally built in. This is this Committee for a Responsible Budget, their math, and I think their interest calculation is too low. But that's actually the chart we have. So understanding you're not at the death spiral yet, but you're getting pretty darn close, where healthcare costs go up substantially because we got 67 million baby boomers. And inflation. Inflation has made all the bad, ugly predictions that weren't supposed to happen for years move forward. And now, because of inflation, you have much higher interest rates, because inflation is the devaluation of the dollar, so you got to have a higher interest rate. And then the Federal Reserve trying to have higher interest rates to slow the economy down, particularly now wage inflation. Healthcare, inflation, interest rates. If we don't get in front of this, if we don't somehow get productivity up, if we somehow don't get investment capital to actually things that are productive.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
NARA is the trade association representing the interests of the rendering industry in the United States and Canada.
Okay, be honest. How often when you think of the livestock industry, do you think of renderers? Ken Swisher, president of the North American Renderers Association.
NARA's 32 member companies operate 178 rendering plants and represent over 95% of the North American production. The industry includes independent renderers, many of which are multi-generation family-owned companies, as well as integrated packer renderers that process only their own animal byproducts. The rendering industry accounts for over $10 billion in U.S. economic activity and employs tens of thousands of people across the country in full-time jobs with benefits. Renderers have operations in both rural and urban communities. Rendering is the cooking and drying of meat and other animal byproducts not used for human consumption. Renderers are often referred to as the original recyclers and are a major force in ensuring a clean and healthy environment, upcycling the animal products that we do not want to or cannot eat into valuable proteins and fats for livestock feed, pet food, and industrial uses. The U.S. rendering industry is essential to the reduction of carbon emissions into the atmosphere. Americans consider only about 50 to 60% of an animal edible, which means the other 40 to 50% is deemed inedible. Instead of wasting about half the meat we produce, rendering upscales these leftovers into essential ingredients for countless new products.
And he says there are three key points.
First, the rendering industry is an essential pathway in creating a sustainable food system. Each year, renderers recycle a huge volume, more than 56 billion pounds of meat and bone leftovers. Rendering saves cropland. More than 13.6 million additional acres would have to be planted to make up for the protein and energy deficit that would result without rendered ingredients used in pet food, biofuels, and livestock feed. Rendering prevents alternative disposal methods, which lead to unnecessary GHG emissions. In fact, an average rendering plant sequesters five times more greenhouse gas emissions from the environment than it emits. If not for rendering, the nationwide capacity of available landfill space would be full in only 4 years. And if the byproducts were disposed of in landfills during decomposition, they would emit large volumes of greenhouse gases detrimental to air quality, and runoff could threaten surface water quality. Rendering is important and a critical part of the solution to reducing food waste. It's a solution that directly addresses food waste by finding practical uses for a wide range of leftovers that that consumers consider inedible. Rendering makes the food production footprint smaller. Second, renderers recycle billions of pounds of used cooking oil from food items like French fries into biodiesel and renewable diesel. Biodiesel and renewable diesel are important to reduce carbon emissions in the transportation sectors. In 2010, EPA concluded that biomass-based diesel produced from used cooking oil and other recycled waste greases reduced life cycle greenhouse gas emission by 86% compared to 2005 petroleum emissions. Finally, renderers have been collecting and repurposing animal byproducts for decades, transforming them into valuable new products. These products are used extensively as ingredients in livestock and aquaculture feeds and pet food. Render proteins and fats provide essential nutrients and energy to keep animal agriculture and pets healthy and growing. In addition, rendered protein meals are a source of calcium and phosphorus, which can be used in animal feeds and organic fertilizer, helping reduce the reliance on imported fertilizer. Renderers are early adopters of a resilient bio-based solution to reclaim and upcycle food waste. We are an essential element to the Select Committee's goal of achieving substantial and permanent reductions in pollution and other activities that contribute to climate crisis.
It's Agriculture Today.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
A new Animal Disease Defense Partnership, including USDA's Animal and Plant Health Inspection Service, National Animal Health Laboratory Network, and the National Bio and Agro Defense Lab, features appointed scientists at five current facilities across the country. And as NAL coordinator Christy Loyacato explains, each participating laboratory offers a specific area of study based on region and scientific category.
We have three level one laboratories, which is the highest level of our NAL laboratories. They take on the most responsibility and typically do the most testing for us.
Those facilities include the New York State Veterinary Diagnostic Lab at Cornell University, Michigan State University's Vet Diagnostic Lab, and the Washington State Animal Disease Diagnostic Laboratory. The remaining two facilities, level two sites, are based in Virginia and Arizona. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.